So picture this for a second. You are standing right in the dead center of a city street, during the absolute peak of a social protest.
Right in the thick of it.
Exactly. And the asphalt under your boots is like radiating this heavy, exhausting heat. The air is super thick and it is incredibly loud.
Oh, yeah, deafening, I imagine.
Yeah, you've got this massive crowd surging all around you, voices chanting in unison, makeshift signs waving in the air. It is just raw, tense, chaotic human energy. You can literally feel the vibration of it rattling around inside your chest.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of environment, it demands every single ounce of your sensory attention, right?
Totally.
There's just no looking away from that kind of grounded historical friction. It's basically the very definition of a heavy reality.
It is. But now I want you to close your eyes and just instantly teleport.
Okay.
The noise of the crowd just completely cuts out. The heat of the asphalt vanishes.
Okay.
And suddenly there is only the rhythmic, roaring, sort of echoing silence of the ocean.
Wow, quite the shift.
Right. You are looking at a massive, churning green wave, and right in the pocket of it, there's a single surfer just gliding seamlessly through the water. Complete fluidity, complete peace. I mean, it's a totally different frequency of existence.
Yeah, and that massive whiplash you just felt, going from the overwhelming friction of the streets to like the absolute flow of the natural world that is the exact psychological space we are exploring today.
Exactly. Because we have been poring over the portfolio of artist Jairo Duke, and what is just so striking is how his work swings violently between those two extremes.
It really does.
So to really understand how an artist pulls this off, we are taking a deep dive into a really brilliant stack of materials today.
Yeah, we've got a lot of good stuff to get through.
We do. We've been looking at a vivid collection of Duke's watercolor and acrylic paintings, and we are analyzing the architectural map of his actual art website, which actually functions as this fascinating psychological archive all on its own.
It really is an archive.
Yeah, and on top of that, we are unpacking these beautiful, really dense philosophical excerpts from the Mari Playa or Sea and Beach chapter of his book, which is called Trastio.
And, what makes this collection of sources so compelling is that we aren't just looking at what he paints.
Right.
We are getting a literal masterclass in the mechanisms of his creative inspiration. Like, we get to track his journey from documenting the gritty, unvarnished reality of daily life all the way out to the expansive canvas of the coast.
So think of this deep dive like examining a heartbeat on a medical monitor.
Well, that's a good way to put it.
We are going to explore these massive, jagged spikes of political and social tension that he documents, and then we're going to trace the line all the way down into the deep restorative valleys of the ocean waves.
Yeah.
Because if you want to understand how a human being balances the crushing weight of social consciousness with, the pursuit of natural harmony, you have to look at the whole monitor.
You really do. So to find that baseline, if you were to pull up his website right now, you wouldn't see a standard, boring gallery menu categorized just by like the year the paintings are made.
It's not chronological.
No, not at all. The structure of his portfolio is incredibly intentional. It feels more like an encyclopedia of modern human existence.
It totally does. The categories he uses to organize his art are just so specific to daily life and culture.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, he devotes entire sections to what he calls pintura urbana, urban painting, and momentos y oficios, which translates to moments and trades. And this is where he is deeply rooted in the figurative, He is looking at the people who make a city actually function.
Yeah, the everyday people.
Exactly. He's painting the street vendors, the daily hustle, basically the mundane routines that usually just go completely unnoticed.
Right, he's building a foundation of the everyday. But what happens is that everyday life eventually collides with history.
It always does.
Yeah, and that's when you hit these incredibly heavy, culturally charged categories in his portfolio. You scroll down, and suddenly, bam, you're facing menus titled Protesta Social for Social Protest, Porta Resistencia for Resistance Port,
Wow.
and No Silencio for No Silence, and Contra Cultura or Counterculture.
And I mean, the sheer volume of this work is staggering. And I think it's really important to note here, based on the materials we are looking at, Duke is acting purely as a documentarian of the human experience.
Yes, exactly.
Like, these categories represent the raw material of his figurative work. Mm. When he quotes a section called Protesta Social, he is neutrally capturing the visceral reality of people in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
He's observing the tension, the kinetic movement of bodies, the cultural backdrop of these moments without, you know, handing the viewer a political manifesto.
Right. He's not telling you what to think.
No, not at all. He is simply holding up a mirror to the immense force of a society in motion.
And he often does this using acrylics or much heavier paints for these urban pieces, which is a really crucial detail. The medium matches the message.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, because acrylic paint dries fast. It can be layered really thickly, creating this heavy texture and grit on the canvas.
Right, it's very tactile.
Exactly. It allows an artist to capture the frantic, immediate, chaotic energy of a protest or a crowded city street. The physical paintings themselves have actual weight to them, which reflects the psychological weight of the subject matter.
But, you know, that psychological weight is exactly where I struggle to understand its process.
How so?
Just reading those category names, you know, protest, resistance, no silence, day in and day out. Think about how overwhelming that must be for a creative mind.
Oh, definitely.
Like, if your canvas is constantly absorbing the frantic energy of a protest and your entire focus is locked on and documenting societal tension, doesn't the artist risk absolute emotional burnout?
Yeah, it's a huge risk.
How does someone carry that much human struggle on their shoulders without eventually just breaking under the pressure?
Well, that potential for burnout is actually the exact catalyst for the core philosophy of his entire body of work.
Really?
Yeah. The answer to how he survives it lies in the title of his book, Trestio. In Spanish, Trestio generally refers to the act of moving.
Okay.
Like physically moving your furniture and your belongings from one house to another. It implies a transition.
Mm-hmm.
It's an unpacking and a repacking of your life.
So it's not like a permanent state. It's an active process of relocation.
Precisely. And Duke applies this concept to his internal life and his artistic process. His work isn't static because his mind isn't static.
Right.
The book defines his creative project as a continuous transit. He does not allow himself to just sit in the heavy burning center of social tension forever.
He has to move.
He moves. He transitions between the spheres of consciousness, memory, and societal commitment. And then, and this is key, he physically and mentally travels toward beauty, natural harmony, and a really deep connection with the environment.
I hear that, but I mean, I have to play devil's advocate for a second here.
Go for it.
If you are out documenting the gritty reality of human struggle on Tuesday, and then on Wednesday, you pack up your paints and head to the beach to look at a beautiful sunset. Doesn't that risk coming across as just escapism?
Ah, I see what you mean.
Yeah, like how does Duke differentiate this concept of Trestio from just running away when things get too heavy?
That's a really vital distinction, and his text addresses it directly. He doesn't view the beach as an escape hatch at all. He views it as a total necessity for survival.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the book excerpts explicitly state that the Mari Playa, the Sea and Beast chapter of his life and art, is proposed as a, quote, sensitive counterpoint.
A sensitive counterpoint?
Yes. Think about music. Hmm. In music, counterpoint is the relationship between two different melodies that are completely independent, but when you play them together, they create a harmony.
Oh, I like that.
You need the high notes to give meaning to the low notes. The heavy politically charged sections of his work are one melody. The ocean is the counter melody.
That makes a lot of sense.
Right. Without the restorative power of the coast, he wouldn't have the emotional bandwidth to ever return to the city and paint the protests.
It's like psychological breathing.
Exactly.
The social protest art, the documentation of all that urban tension and noise, is this deep, sharp, really difficult inhalation. And the beach scenes are the necessary long, slow exhalation that basically keeps the organism alive.
Which brings us to how this exhalation actually looks on canvas.
Mm-hmm.
Because when Duke undergoes this Trestio and moves to the coast, his medium completely changes.
He leaves the acrylics behind.
He leaves behind the heavy, thick acrylics of the city and transitions entirely to watercolor.
Oh, wow. Let's pull the listener into this visual space because there is a stunning watercolor in our sources called Incitation.
Oh, that one is beautiful.
It is. When you look at it, the first thing that hits you is the sheer luminosity. It's a brilliant, warm sunrise or maybe a sunset just bleeding across the entire sky.
Mm-hmm.
And in the foreground, there are these two large thatched roof huts acting as umbrellas. And everything in the foreground is painted in complete silhouette.
Yeah, it's very striking.
Very. dark, deep, quiet tones against that massive, bright sky.
And, you know, the choice to use watercolor here is profound. Unlike thick acrylics, watercolor requires a massive amount of control, but also a willingness to let the water do what it wants to do.
Or you can't totally force it.
Exactly. It bleeds, it blends, it flows. The medium itself forces the artist into a state of flow, which mirrors the ocean he's actually painting.
And walking across the wet sand, moving toward the right side of the frame in this painting, are two surfers.
Mm-hmm.
They are also entirely in silhouette, carrying their boards casually under their arms. And because the sand is wet, their dark figures cast these perfect mirror-like reflections into the water below them.
Gorgeous.
The stillness of the piece is just almost hypnotic.
There's another painting in the collection, Valencat, that utilizes this exact same technique of the silhouette, but focuses on a totally different kind of connection.
Oh, Valencat is incredible. It's another silhouetted watercolor, but this time it's a couple standing on the edge of the beach, wrapped in a very deep, intimate embrace.
Yeah.
But the sky behind them, I mean, it practically hums with energy, striking blues at the top of the frame, fading down into these impossibly bright yellows, and finally resting on these deep burning oranges right at the horizon line where the sky meets the water.
We really need to look at how these visual elements act on the viewer's psychology, too.
What do you mean?
Well, by painting the surfers in incitation and the embracing couple in Valencat entirely in silhouette, Duke is deliberately removing their specific identities. He is erasing their faces.
Oh, so they become a blank slate for the viewer.
Exactly.
Like, you aren't just passively watching a specific couple embrace on a distant beach. Visually, the painting invites you to project yourself into that shadow.
Yes.
You are invited to be that couple. You are invited to feel the warmth of that sunrise.
That is exactly the point of the aesthetic.
Yeah.
And this connects directly back to Duke's writing in Trastio. The text explains that the sea functions as a symbolic, vital space of freedom and renewal.
Mm-hmm.
The elements he paints, the water, the air, the radiant light, they aren't just a pretty background. They are active participants. He writes that these elements configure a, quote, poetic encounter between nature and the human soul.
So when he talks about Trastio, this continuous transit through life, he is making the argument that traversing through the modern world cannot just be about enduring hardship.
Right.
It must also include a deliberate transit through love, through beauty, and through the essential quiet moments of human connection.
Yes, absolutely.
You can't just document the Porta Resistencia and call it a complete picture of humanity. You have to also document the embrace on the beach.
Because the ocean allows for the expansion of the interior life. It refuels the empathy and the energy required to face the heavy exterior world.
But, you know, the ocean isn't just a passive place to take a nap and recharge your batteries.
No, definitely not.
When you look closely at his coastal work, it's not entirely made up of still silhouettes and quiet sunsets. He zooms in really heavily on the dynamic, highly active pursuit of surfing.
Right. He shifts from just observing the environment to physically interacting with it.
Exactly. Let's look at the painting called Catlin, Surfer.
Oh, yeah.
The energy shift from the previous pieces is massive. The quiet stillness is just entirely gone. You are looking at a surfer in a black wetsuit, actively riding deep inside the curve of a gigantic churning wave.
Mm-hmm.
The water is an intense, vivid, almost violent green, and it contrasts sharply with this explosive white splash and foam crashing down all around the surfer.
It really jumps out at you.
It is pure, unadulterated kinetic energy. I mean, it looks incredibly dangerous, but the posture of the surfer is completely composed.
And in his accompanying text, Duke elevates surfing far beyond just a recreational sport or like an adrenaline rush.
What is he at?
He writes that surfing is a profound metaphor for seeking harmony between the physical body, human consciousness, and the vast power of nature. He describes it as a rigorous practice of listening, of finding balance, and crucially, of surrender to the movement of the sea.
Okay, I have to pause on that word, surrender.
Yeah.
Because we just spent the first half of this deep dive establishing that a massive pillar of his figurative work is dedicated to documenting resistance.
Right.
Protest. A category literally called no silence. How can an artist dedicate so much of his life's work to the concept of resistance and then turn around and claim his ultimate metaphor for natural harmony is surrender?
It sounds a bit contradictory.
To anyone listening, those sound like mutually exclusive philosophies.
It totally sounds like a paradox, but reconciling those two concepts is actually the true brilliance of his Trastio.
How so?
The surrender he is talking about when a person is inside a massive wave isn't about giving up. It was not a synonym for defeat or apathy.
Okay, if it's not defeat, then what is the psychological mechanism at play?
It is about the recognition of scale. Yeah. When you are in the streets, in human society, you resist injustice. Because human systems are artificial. They were built by people, which means they can be changed by people.
Right.
But you cannot fight the ocean. You cannot stage a protest against a tidal wave. If you try to rigidly resist a massive churning wall of green water that weighs thousands of tons, it will simply crush you.
Oh, man. It's like psychological judo.
Exactly.
Instead of rigidly blocking the weight of the world, which will just snap your arms in half, you use the momentum of the wave to carry you forward.
Yes.
Surrender in this context means synchronization. It means letting go of your human ego and realizing you are interacting with a force much older and much larger than yourself.
And that synchronization requires a very specific kind of listening. In the face of societal chaos, which is incredibly loud and entirely unpredictable, the ocean offers a masterclass in elemental balance.
Wow.
Duke is showing us that there are fundamental truths of existence that you just cannot fight. You must align yourself with them. By learning to ride the wave, by surrendering to the rhythm of the natural world, your consciousness actually expands.
Which is an incredibly profound way to look at life. Though, speaking personally, my one attempt at surfing mostly involved surrendering a massive amount of salt water directly into my sinuses.
Yeah, it's not easy.
But jokes aside, what this means for you, the person looking at his art, is that the resistance in the streets and the surrender on the surfboard are two sides of the same survival mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
You resist the man-made things that diminish human dignity, and you synchronize with the natural things that elevate the human soul.
That is the complete picture of his Trastio. The constant, necessary movement between fighting for a better world and allowing yourself to experience the awe and beauty that makes that world worth fighting for in the first place.
So think about your own life for a second.
Yeah.
Think about your own daily routine and your own transit through the week. Where is your personal Puerto Resistencia?
Yeah, that's a good question.
What is that space in your life, your career, your community, where you have to brace yourself, fight the good fight, and basically engage with the heavy realities of the world?
And equally important, if not more so, where is your Mari Playa?
Exactly.
Where do you go to find that sensitive counterpoint?
Yeah.
What is the space, whether physical or mental, where you go to drop your ego, regain your balance, and synchronize with something larger than your daily stress?
Because if you don't have that second space, if you don't have a way to exhale, you're going to end up like a flat line on that heartbeat monitor we talked about earlier.
You really are.
You need the deep valleys to balance out the spikes. But before we wrap this up, there is one final, totally fascinating detail from Duke's text that we haven't touched on yet. And it fundamentally changes how you look at his ocean paintings.
Oh, you mean the nature of his dialogue with the sea?
Yes. Because when Duke writes about this deep connection with the coastal environment, he notes that this dialogue isn't just an abstract relationship with water and wind. He explicitly writes that it includes marine life and cetaceans, specifically meaning whales and dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't just view them as passing wildlife. He understands them as expressions of a, quote, living intelligence and an expanded consciousness.
And this completely reframes the entire concept of the ocean for his work. It's no longer just an empty, watery gymnasium where humans go to practice their balance, you know?
Right, it's not a playground.
No, it is a highly populated, incredibly complex, intelligent ecosystem.
And science backs up that intuition entirely. Think about the biological reality of cetaceans. We are talking about creatures with brains that are physically larger and in some areas more complexly folded than our own.
Yeah, it's amazing.
They have been evolving and adapting to their environment for tens of millions of years longer than humans have even existed. Dolphins have complex social structures. They have names for one another.
They do, yeah.
Whales communicate across thousands of miles of ocean using intricate songs that evolve and change over time. They utilize echolocation to literally see the world through sound.
They possess this profound, almost alien intelligence. They have mastered the exact synchronization with the ocean that Duke argues humans are desperately trying to achieve when we surf.
Exactly.
They are the ultimate embodiment of flowing with natural forces rather than resisting them.
It really puts human arrogance into perspective, doesn't it?
For sure.
We spend so much of our time vibrating with the tension of the city, shouting over each other, trying to force the world to bend to our will. But Duke is suggesting that there is a vast, ancient consciousness swimming just off the coast that has already figured out how to live in perfect harmony with the planet.
So when he paints a surfer on a wave,
yeah,
He isn't just painting a human playing in the water. He is painting a human attempting to tap into that ancient living intelligence of the sea.
I really want to leave you with this thought to mull over today. When the human world of politics, of endless protests, of nonstop digital noise gets entirely too loud, what might happen if we stopped shouting at each other for a moment? What could we learn if we actively tried to listen to the living intelligence of an ecosystem that has been riding the waves for millions of years?
That's a great point.
If the ultimate goal is to find balance in a chaotic world, could tuning into the frequency of the ocean be the ultimate counterculture?
It definitely makes you look at a simple day at the beach in an entirely new light.
It does. Next time you feel the oppressive heat and the chaotic noise of your daily life closing in on you, just remember that somewhere out there, a massive green wave is silently rolling in. You just have to know when to pack up your heavy bags, embrace the Trastio, and paddle out.